Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
So she fits right in.
Is she speaking for herself, or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? Once at the RNC, she did say that, hey, I'm speaking for the party. I get that. That's part of the job. So what about here? I will say this. I think your interview did a good job of exposing, I think, many of the contradictions. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because
oh, no.
Many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, been met with character assassination.
Why?
So it is,
you deserve
that's
it.
Where you begin here. And so when NBC made the decision to give her NBC News' credibility, you got to ask yourself, what does she bring NBC News? And when we make deals like this, and I've been at this company a long time.
Not NBC's credibility.
Access to audience. Sometimes it's access to an individual. Mm-hmm. And we can have a journalistic ethics debate about that.
No, you can't. Clearly.
I'm willing to have that debate.
No, you're not.
And if you told me we were hiring her as a technical advisor to the Republican convention, I think that would be certainly defensible. If you told me we're talking to her, but let's see how she does in some interviews and maybe vet her with actual journalists inside the network, see if it's a two-way, what she can bring to the network. So I do think, unfortunately, this interview is always going to be looked through the prism of who is she speaking for, right? I think you did everything you could do. You got put into an impossible situation booking this interview, and then all of a sudden the rug's pulled out from under you.
He's going to cry.
She's being paid to show up.
What is this?
It's unfortunate for this program, but I am glad you did the best that you could, and that's why the three of us are on here to try to bolster that editorial independence.
What?
Struggle sessions will continue until morale improves.
Mostly a protest. The fires have been started.
NBC News, everyone.
The journalism industry is overrun with elite, underqualified, rich, entitled nepo babies.
How are you, baby? How old are you?
I don't know.
People should not be walking around with masks.
Russian disinformation.
Your stewards.
My, oh my. What a weekend. it's Wednesday. It's March 27th. A couple updates. I did not get drilled on Friday. I have to go see another specialist because what I told you that I had like a root canal under the crown or whatever, and what they found is it's a hidden canal. So they didn't drill it the first time. So I have to go to a specialist who's going to, you know, take care of that. It's not an emergency, so I'm not in no real hurry. Other than it's not comfort, but it's just I have a bump and it's whatever. And I had to take yesterday. I took Monday and yesterday because I had some writing projects pile up, and I'm going to go into one that I had at Spectator. I have a magazine piece coming out, I believe either next month or the month after, on how Twitter is both the worst it's ever been and the best it's ever been. And it's a fun piece. It's one that we wrestled with. We went back and forth on as far as the tone of it, the message. And it's funny because the editors pitched it at me. They're like, we think you're perfect for this. Just, you know, how Twitter's kind of back to being the wild, wild west. And then a few days later, they were just like, I hate this. And we were talking about this bridge collapse in Maryland that Joe Biden apparently thinks he's taken a train over several times in his life. And how Twitter's real power, as I've always said, is it's breaking news. It's real-time news. Until people stop posting real-time news to it, and people like Adam Schefter, who I've talked about on this podcast as well, until it loses that power, it's always going to be here. Until there's a replacement that can duplicate that power, it's not going to go anywhere. But we talked about how it was almost impossible to find actual real-time news on the bridge, experts on the on this, how this happened, because nobody's verified anymore, and everyone is suggesting it was either the Jews or P. Diddy's human trafficking. And people either sincerely do that or they do it to juice engagements. And on top of that, now we have the pussy and biobots, which I specifically reference in this piece. And that's kind of what I mean about the worst it's ever been. I talk more about the actual technical functionality of it. It's broken. It is Twitter's completely and to me unequivocally broken, at least on a technical level. It doesn't work. There's a skeleton crew running it. Half the time, I can't see my replies. I can't see my mentions. It's nothing to see here. It doesn't refresh. I just get spammed with crypto bots, and now it's porn bots are out of control in replies. And just to find information for somebody like me, and I said that this was going to happen, is a laboring experience. I haven't been paid for subscriptions for November or December. And that's not something I make a huge deal about. I've contacted Twitter. I don't have a lot of subscriptions. I think I have like 75 people. And I don't really use it. And I said that if I do subscriptions, I'll follow you back. You can get into my DMs then. You're essentially paying me like $2, $3, whatever, for access, which a lot of people like on social media. And I do. And I talk to people and they send me links and they send me tweets that they see and stuff. And I just don't really believe in subscriber content on Twitter. My tweets are out there for everybody to read. But for what it's worth, I just haven't been paid for 2 months. Like, whatever. It's not going to, you know, make me go hungry or you know, not be able to pay my energy bill or whatever it is. But it is that. Like, and there's nobody there who answers questions or there who I can reach out to. And so on that level, it's just broken. It's one of the has one of the worst usability functions of any social media platform right now. That said, at least I can say boys can't be girls and girls can't be boys without the threat of completely losing my account. And that's really what the piece is about. I was going to go into – I had kind of had a week planned out. Kara Swisher had a fascinating appearance on Bill Maher where she talks about some of this stuff. And I talk about how – while X is just broken on a purely technical level, old Twitter had to be destroyed for the future of any online discourse. Twitter had ceased being a social media platform and a social media company and had become an intelligence censorship apparatus for corporate journalists and people like Kara Swisher, who, if there was an opinion they didn't like on Twitter X, they could get in Yoel Ross' ear of Ajay Gad or whomever at Twitter and say, hey, did you see this person over here, this libs of TikTok? Do you see what they're doing? They're doing hateful conduct, and they're going to get people killed. You should do something about that because I'm going to write a story, and maybe if you don't, and the Taylor Lorenzes and the Ben Collins and the Brandy Zadroznys, it had become their tool to oppress viewpoints they did not agree with. And whether or not these people violated terms of service, Twitter would then update their terms of service to hateful speech conduct. And it had gotten to a point to where you couldn't tell a journalist to learn to code without risking getting your account banned. And that's what the piece is. It's a fascinating piece. It's one that, if you've listened to this podcast, I have opinions in there that I've expressed here about when Elon Musk purchased it, all the journals went, peace out, it's dead, see you later. And everyone went, okay, bye. Nobody followed them over to Mastodon. Nobody followed them to Blue Sky. Nobody followed them to Threads. And they realized, we can exist without you. In fact, we prefer you leave. And when we did that, when Twitter's user base did that, when we were like, hef, sayonara, see you later, they kind of stood in the doorway and were like, what, you're not coming with us? No, we're going to pull up a couch right here, and we're going to now express our minds freely. Because while Elon Musk has pretty much destroyed any functionality to the website that existed, and I don't believe he is the free speech warrior he portrays himself out to be, as he's demonstrated, but again, at least I can express basic opinions. Again, like a boy can't be a girl. I can put that on Twitter X now, and I go about my day and not worried that I might come back, and my account is nuked for hateful conduct. Is some of that still happening? Yes, of course. But for the most part, Musk got rid of the entire trust and safety board that was more concerned about ESG and social engineering than they were a platform where people could express their opinions. And as long as it wasn't illegal or threats against the president or politicians or celebrities or anything like that, it's deemed acceptable. And so that's what the piece is. And I mentioned Adam Schefter, and I say this is what the Washington Post hypochondriac tech reporter doesn't understand. She doesn't drive the news cycle. Her personal grievances with COVID or libs of TikTok or whatever doesn't drive the news cycle. Gawker journalism doesn't drive the news cycle. In fact, it's really not a part of our media anymore. RIP Gawker, Vice, Jezebel, whatever. It's still at the Washington Post. It's still at the Atlantic. They've integrated that. But like I said, Adam Schefter is an example I use in this piece. He has a following of 10 million people on Twitter or X. And if you go over to Meta Threads, he has 400,000. He has fewer followers than I have on Twitter X. He's not going to abandon that reach and that audience simply because he doesn't like the politics of the person who owns it. And people aren't going to abandon the platform as long as he's there breaking real news about NFL free agency, for instance, or which players are active so people can adjust their fantasy lineups, or they can lay a parlay bet online sports gambling now. So until someone like him leaves, Twitter's going to be around a while or in some zombie-like state, and people will tolerate how it doesn't function, it's broken, replies don't work, mentions don't work, DMs are still unencrypted, the porn bots, pussy in bio, the crypto spam. Yeah, it's annoying. And you can imagine with someone who of my meager following, about 400,000 people-ish, to just about everything that I post, my mentions are just a wasteland of porn bots and crypto bots, and I don't really even know who's real anymore. I don't even know if I'm real anymore. But I would rather have that than not being able to speak an opinion that the people who run the platform or the journalists I'm disagreeing with can deplatform me over. It's a fascinating piece, and I had to spend yesterday finishing it, and I actually finished it this morning because I didn't really have to take notes for what today is going to be about, and I'm sure you've hopefully been anticipating some thoughts I've had on this. But before I get to the NBC News Chinese Communist struggle sessions over Rona McDaniel, the most like milquetoast conservative Republican out there, the most like moderate, plain, light MAGA politician, consultant, whatever you want to call her you could get is not acceptable at NBC anymore. We'll get to that. I wanted to talk about my Hack Magnus bracket for Ruthless. We don't have a cross promotion or anything like that, but people ask, are you going to do one this year? And I looked at it, I was like, okay. The last couple of years, I haven't really I love this because it's obviously March Madness, and but I didn't really partake in it over the last couple of years. And I think I told them because they didn't update it. Like, they still had Brian Stelter in there, and Stelter isn't really doing anything. I know he just did an interview for Dispatch. And there's other journalists that are in the bracket that aren't really relevant. And so I kind of just suggested they update it. And for the most part, they did. But I did fill one out. And I even put it on Twitter X. And I said I weighed several factors for Hack Madness this year. One, the level of power and influence. And this is, I genuinely did this. Okay, so when I'm trying to pick these people, I kind of put out a criteria. Similar that you would do for your basketball team. I said, level of power and influence. What is their audience like? What does their audience reach? How much can they influence a lie or a narrative? Or how much can they influence people dishonestly? Number two was the audience reach itself. How many followers do they have? How, on their podcast, do they listen? Three was level of hypocrisy. How much of a hypocrite, professionally or personally, has this person either become or has always been? And then lastly, the level of just plain actual dishonesty when it comes to our media. Just flat out rank dishonesty. And then I weighed those factors against each individual match. So for instance, if someone's audience reach was larger than the other person's actual dishonesty, that person would win out. Or if somebody is so fucking hypocritical and dishonest in media, does that overwhelm the audience reach of the person they're up against? So my biggest one is I had Taylor Lorenz going out in the first round against Breonna Joy Gray. And people questioned when they saw it on Twitter X. This was the one that they saw the most. And I'm probably going to get losing on that one. I don't think Taylor Lorenz is dishonest. I think she is very much honest about the fact that she might be Satan herself. Taylor Lorenz is very honest about her particular style of journalism. She's just clearly insane. And so I weigh that against Breonna Joy Gray and her turn about just shamelessly promoting Hamas propaganda since October, casting doubt on sexual assaults. And that absolute level of hypocrisy, dishonesty, audience reach kind of overwhelms my opinion of Taylor Lorenz. I'm not going to go through every pick, but that was kind of the criteria. I had Rick Wilson going up against Rachel Bade, a Politico, and that one was a fun match. And Wilson, who's tapered off because of the Lincoln Project, although, you know, Trump's back in there, so it's they stand to make a ton of money. But Wilson is one of these just off the charts, dishonest, hypocritical asshole who has lost audience reach. I have him going up against John Harwood, and this was a fun match because Harwood gets all the way to the final four for me, which is interesting because he doesn't have that much of an audience anymore. He's fired. He's Keith Olbermann with polite inside voice. So his influence has kind of waned, but just the rank dishonesty that this guy puts out there just almost overwhelms everyone until we get to the final four. And so based on the criteria that I laid out, the level of dishonesty, hypocrisy, audience reach, all of that stuff, I pretty much just went chalk. I have Aaron Rupar, who, again, meets all of those, against Ben Collins. And then I have Philip Bump against John Harwood. And this was not a particularly a difficult call for the championship this year. It's Philip Bump and Ben Collins in the championship. And Bump had himself a career year. This was his all-star season. With the podcast, I don't know. That's going to go down as just the journalist moment of the year. The problem is Ben Collins was that every day of the year last year. And as I mentioned, one of the people who said, Twitter's going to die, we're all going to Mastodon, come on everybody, and we all just went, have fun at Mastodon, like the German pedophile website, go, hey, have fun, guys. And then they figured out, oh shit, Mastodon doesn't want us here either, and there's some really weird content on here that maybe somebody like Kurt Eitenwald would enjoy. Oh, okay, well, let's go over to Blue Sky, everyone. All right, I'll go to Blue Sky, and then, oh, it's invite only, and do you guys have any invites? And, oh, we're going over to Twitter Threads. Oh, we're going over to Meta Threads, everyone. Da, da, da. Oh, this is nice. There's no noise over here. This is where we can just listen to each other talk. Hey, why are they having so much fun over there on Twitter still? Why hasn't the company folded? Huh. That's who Ben Collins was the entire year, and someone who lost all of his toys and someone who lost all of his contacts in Twitter suddenly stopped writing. I think he's written one story in the last 12 months, and that's kind of become the joke with him. And there's reports that he was probably going to be out at NBC. They're just going to wait to pay out his contract and then sayonara to him. Because as it turns out, Ben doesn't know how to do journalism. He doesn't actually do journalism. He had people at Twitter hand-feeding him things and him contacting people at Twitter to censor and get people banned. And then Elon Musk came along and ruined all of that. And that's when you get the Kara Swisher's opinion of Elon Musk and Brandi Zadrozny's opinion of Elon Musk or Taylor Lorenz or whomever it is. I have Ben Collins beating Philip Bump in the Hack Magnus 2024 tournament. It won't surprise me if Bump upsets at the buzzer, but it was a pretty easy call. So feel free to either, I don't know if you can post a photo on Substack's comments. I don't think you can, but feel free to leave your picks, why you picked them. And I know voting's on its way. I told Smug I'm totally going to juice the bracket. So whenever I see somebody vote, I'm going to tell people who to vote for. But anyway, that's who I have winning this year is Ben Collins. Rona McDaniel. We'll be right back. been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.